rolled in stone and earth. It was there that Sam Stoops's wife soaked and scrubbed and beat the clothes before carrying them up to the roof to dry. The big stone washtub was also used for baths. Bathing required drawing water from the well bucket by bucket, heating it over the hearth in a big iron kettle, emptying the kettle into the tub, then starting the whole process once again. It took 4 buckets to fill the kettle and 3 kettles to fill the tub. By the time the last kettle was hot, the water from the first had cooled to lukewarm. Ser Benes had been heard to say that the whole thing was too much bloody bother, which was why he crawled with lice and fleas and smelled like a bad cheese. Dunk, at least, had Egg to help him when he felt in dire need of a good wash, as he did tonight. The lad drew the water in a glum silence and hardly spoke as it was heating. "Egg?" Dunk asked as the last kettle was coming to a boil. "Is aught amiss?" When Egg made no reply, he said, "Help me with the kettle." Together they wrestled it from hearth to tub, taking care not to splash themselves. "Sir," the boy said, "what do you think Ser Eustace means to do?"
"Tear down the dam and fight off the widow's men if they try to stop us."
He spoke loudly so as to be heard above the splashing of the bathwater. Steam rose in a white curtain as they poured, bringing a flush to his face.
"Their shields are woven wood, Ser. A lance could punch right through them, or a crossbow bolt."
"We may find some bits of armor for them when they're ready."
That was the best they could hope for.
"They might be killed, Ser. Wet Watt is still half a boy. Will Barleycorn is to be married the next time the Septon comes, and Big Rob doesn't even know his left foot from his right."
Dunk let the empty kettle thump down onto the hard-packed earthen floor.
"Roger of Pennytree was younger than Wet Watt when he died on the red grass field. There were men in your father's host who'd just been married to, and other men who'd never even kissed a girl. There were hundreds who didn't know their left foot from their right, maybe thousands."
"That was different," Egg insisted. "That was war."
"So was this. The same thing, only smaller."
"Smaller and stupider, Ser."
"That's not for you or me to say,"
Dunk told him.
"It's their duty to go to war when Ser Eustace summons them, and to die, if need be."
"Then we shouldn't have named them, Ser. It will only make the grief harder for us when they die."
He screwed up his face.
"If we used my boot..." "No."
Dunk stood on one leg to pull his own boot off.
"Yes, but my father..."
"No."
The second boot went the way of the first.
"We..." "No."
Dunk pulled his sweat-stained tunic up over his head and tossed it at Egg.
"Ask Sam Stoops's wife to wash that for me."
"I will, Ser, but..."
"No," I said. "Do you need a clout in the ear to help you hear better?"
He unlaced his breeches. Underneath was only him. It was too hot for small clothes.
"It's good that you're concerned for Watt and Watt and Watt and the rest of them, but the boot is only meant for dire need." "How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? 1,000 eyes and 1. What did your father tell you when he sent you off to squire for me?"
"To keep my hair shaved or dyed and tell no man my true name," the boy said, with obvious reluctance.
Egg had served Dunk for a good 1.5 years, though some days it seemed like 20. They had climbed the Prince's Pass together and crossed the deep sands of Dorne, both red and white. A pole boat had taken them down the Greenblood to the Planky Town, where they took passage for Old Town on the Galleass White Lady. They had slept in stables, inns, and ditches, broken bread with holy brothers, whores, and mummers, and chased down 100 puppet shows. Egg had kept Dunk's horse groomed, his longsword sharp, his mail free of rust. He had been as good a companion as any man could wish for, and the hedge knight had come to think of him almost as a little brother.
"He isn't, though."
This Egg had been hatched of dragons, not of chickens. Egg might be a hedge knight's squire, but Aegon of House Targaryen was the 4th and youngest son of Maker, Prince of Summerhall, himself the 4th son of the late King Daeron the Good, the 2nd of his name, who'd sat the Iron Throne for 25 years until the great spring sickness took him off.
"So far as most folk are concerned, Aegon Targaryen went back to Summerhall with his brother Daeron after the tourney at Ashford Meadow. Dunk reminded the boy. Your father did not want it known that you were wandering the Seven Kingdoms with some hedge knight. So let's hear no more about your boot.
A look was all the answer that he got. Egg had big eyes, and somehow his shaven head made them look even larger. In the dimness of the lamplit cellar they looked black, but in better light their true color could be seen, deep and dark and purple. Valyrian eyes, thought Dunk. In Westeros few but the blood of the dragon had eyes that color, or hair that shone like beaten gold and strands of silver woven all together. When they'd been pulling down the green blood, the orphan girls had made a game of rubbing Egg's shaven head for luck. It made the boy blush redder than a pomegranate.
Girls are so stupid, he would say. The next one who touches me is going into the river.
Dunk had to tell him, then I'll be touching you. I'll give you such a clout in the ear you'll be hearing bells for a moon's turn. That only goaded the boy to further insolence.
Better bells than stupid girls, he insisted,
but he never threw anyone into the river.
Dunk stepped into the tub and eased himself down until the water covered him up to his chin. It was still scalding hot on top, though cooler farther down. He clenched his teeth to keep from yelping. If he did, the boy would laugh. Egg liked his bathwater scalding hot.
Do you need more water boiled, Sarah?
This will serve.
Dunk rubbed at his arms and watched the dirt come off in long gray clouds.
Fetch me the soap. Oh, and the long-handled scrub brush, too.
Thinking about Egg's hair had made him remember that his own was filthy. He took a deep breath and slid down beneath the water to give it a good soak. When he emerged again, sloshing, Egg was standing beside the tub with the soap and long-handled horsehair brush in hand.
You have hairs on your cheek, Dunk observed as he took the soap from him. Two of them, there, below your ear. Make sure you get them the next time you shave your head.
I will, sir.
The boy seemed pleased by the discovery.
No doubt he thinks a bit of beard makes him a man.
Dunk had thought the same when he first found some fuzz growing on his upper lip.
I tried to shave with my dagger and almost nicked my nose off. Go and get some sleep now, he told Egg. I won't have any more need of you till morning.
It took a long while to scrub all the dirt and sweat away. Afterward, he put the soap aside, stretched out as much as he was able, and closed his eyes. The water had cooled by then. After the savage heat of the day, it was a welcome relief. He soaked till his feet and fingers were all wrinkled up, and the water had gone gray and cold, and only then reluctantly climbed out. Though he and Egg had been given thick straw pallets down in the cellar, Dunk preferred to sleep up on the roof. The air was fresher there, and sometimes there was a breeze. It was not as though he need have much fear of rain. The next time it rained on them up there would be the first. Egg was asleep by the time Dunk reached the roof. He lay on his back with his hands behind his head and stared up at the sky. The stars were everywhere, thousands and thousands of them. It reminded him of a night at Ashford Meadow before the tourney started. He had seen a falling star that night. Falling stars were supposed to bring you luck, so he'd told Tansel to paint it on his shield. But Ashford had been anything but lucky for him. Before the tourney ended, he had almost lost a hand and a foot, and three good men had lost their lives.
I gained a squire, though. Egg was with me when I rode away from Ashford. That was the only good thing to come of all that happened.
He hoped that no stars fell tonight. There were red mountains in the distance and white sands beneath his feet. Dunk was digging, plunging a spade into the dry, hot earth, and flinging the fine sand back over his shoulder. He was making a hole.
A grave, he thought. A grave for hope.
A trio of Dornish knights stood watching, making mock of him in quiet voices. Farther off, the merchants waited with their mules and wains and sand sledges. They wanted to be off, but he could not leave until he'd buried Chestnut. He would not leave his old friend to the snakes and scorpions and sand dogs. The Stot had died on the long, thirsty crossing between the Prince's Pass and Vaith, with Egg upon his back. His front legs just seemed to fold up under him, and he knelt right down, rolled onto his side, and died. His carcass sprawled beside the hole. Already it was stiff. Soon it would begin to smell. Dunk was weeping as he dug, to the amusement of the Dornish knights.
Water is precious in the waste, one said. You ought not to waste it, sir. The other chuckled and said, "Why do you weep? It was only a horse, and a poor one." Chestnut, Dunk thought, digging. His name was Chestnut. And he bore me on his back for years, and never bucked or bit. The old stud had looked a sorry thing beside the sleek sand steeds that the Dornish men were riding, with their elegant heads, long necks, and flowing manes, but he had given all he had to give.
"Weeping for a sway-backed stot," Sir Arlen said, in his old man's voice. "Why, lad, you never wept for me, who put you on his back."
He gave a little laugh to show he meant no harm by the reproach.
"That's Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall." "He shed no tears for me either," said Balor Breakspear from the grave. "Though I was his prince, the hope of Westeros, the gods never meant for me to die so young."
"My father was only 39, said Prince Valar. "He had it in him to be a great king, the greatest since Aegon the Dragon."
He looked at Dunk with cool blue eyes.
"Why would the gods take him and leave you?"
The young prince had his father's light brown hair, but a streak of silver gold ran through it. "You are dead," Dunk wanted to scream. "You are all three dead. Why won't you leave me be?" Ser Arlen had died of a chill. Prince Balor of the blow his brother dealt him during Dunk's trial of 7, his son Valar during the great spring sickness.
"I am not to blame for that. We were in Dorne. We never even knew."
"You are mad," the old man told him. "We will dig no hole for you when you kill yourself with this folly. In the deep sands a man must hoard his water."
"Begone with you, Ser Duncan," Valar said. "Begone."
Egg helped him with the digging. The boy had no spade, only his hands, and the sand flowed back into the grave as fast as they could fling it out. It was like trying to dig a hole in the sea.
"I have to keep digging," Dunk told himself, though his back and shoulders ached from the effort. "I have to bury him down deep where the sand dogs cannot find him. I have to
die,"
said Big Rob the Simpleton from the bottom of the grave, lying there so still and cold, with a ragged red wound gaping in his belly. He did not look very big at all. Dunk stopped and stared at him.
"You're not dead. You're down sleeping in the cellar."
He looked to Ser Arlen for help.
"Tell him, Ser," he pleaded. "Tell him to get out of the grave."
Only it was not Ser Arlen of Pennytree standing over him at all. It was Ser Bennis of the Brown Shield. The Brown Knight only cackled.
"Dunk the Lunk," he said. "Gutting slow but certain. Never knew a man to live with his entrails hanging out."
Red froth bubbled on his lips. He turned and spat, and the white sands drank it down. Treb was standing behind him with an arrow in his eye, weeping slow red tears. And there was Wet Watt, too, his head cut near in half, with old Lem and red-eyed Pate and all the rest. They had all been chewing sour leaf with Bennis, Dunk thought at first, but then he realized that it was blood trickling from their mouths.
"Dead," he thought, "all dead."
And the Brown Knight brayed,
"Aye, so best get busy. You've more graves to dig, Lunk. 8 for them, and 1 for me, and 1 for old Ser Useless, and 1 last one for your bald-head boy."
The spade slipped from Dunk's hands.
"Egg," he cried, "run. We have to run."
But the sands were giving way beneath their feet. When the boy tried to scramble from the hole, its crumbling sides gave way and collapsed. Dunk saw the sands wash over Egg, burying him as he opened his mouth to shout. He tried to fight his way to him, but the sands were rising all around him, pulling him down into the grave, filling his mouth, his nose, his eyes. Come the break of day, Ser Bennis sat about teaching their recruits to form a shield wall. He lined the 8 of them up shoulder to shoulder, with their shields touching and their spear points poking through like long, sharp wooden teeth. Then Dunk and Egg mounted up and charged them. Maester refused to go within 10 feet of the spears and stopped abruptly, but Thunder had been trained for this. The big warhorse pounded straight ahead, gathering speed. Hens ran beneath his legs and flapped away screeching. Their panic must have been contagious. Once more Big Rob was the first to drop his spear and run, leaving a gap in the middle of the wall. Instead of closing up, Standfast's other warriors joined the flight. Thunder trod upon their discarded shields before Dunk could rein him up. Woven branches cracked and splintered beneath his iron-shod hooves.
Ser Benis rattled off a pungent string of curses as chickens and peasants scattered in all directions. Egg fought manfully to hold his laughter in, but finally lost the battle.
Enough of that.
Dunk drew Thunder to a halt, unfastened his helm, and tore it off.
If they do that in a battle, it will get the whole lot of them killed. And you and me as well, most like.
The morning was already hot, and he felt as soiled and sticky as if he'd never bathed at all. His head was pounding, and he could not forget the dream he dreamed the night before.
It never happened that way, he tried to tell himself. It wasn't like that.
Chestnut had died on the long, dry ride to Vaith. That part was true. He and Egg rode double until Egg's brother gave them Maester. The rest of it, though.
I never wept. I might have wanted to, but I never did.
He had wanted to bury the horse as well, but the Dornishman would not wait.
Sand dogs must eat and feed their pups,
one of the Dornish knights told him as he helped Dunk strip the stout of saddle and bridle.
His flesh will feed the dogs or feed the sands. In a year his bones will be scoured clean. This is Dorne, my friend.
Remembering, Dunk could not help but wonder who would feed on Watt's flesh. And Watt's. And Watt's. Maybe there are Checky fish down beneath the Checky water. He rode Thunder back to the tower and dismounted.
Egg, help Ser Benis round them up and get them back here.
He shoved his helm at Egg and strode to the steps. Ser Eustace met him in the dimness of his solar.
That was not well done.
No, my lord, said Dunk. They will not serve.
A sworn sword owes his liege service and obedience, but this is madness.
It was their first time. Their fathers and brothers were as bad or worse when they began their training. My sons worked with them before we went to help the king. Every day for a good fortnight. They made soldiers of them.
And when the battle came, my lord, Dunk asked, how did they fare then? How many of them came home with you?
The old knight looked long at him.
Lem, he said at last, and Pate, and Dake. Dake foraged for us. He was as fine a forager as I ever knew. We never marched on empty bellies. Three came back, sir, three and me.
His mustache quivered.
It may take longer than a fortnight.
My lord, said Dunk, the woman could be here upon the morrow with all her men.
They are good lads, he thought, but they will soon be dead lads if they go up against the knights of Coldmoat. There must be some other way.
Some other way.
Ser Eustace ran his fingers lightly across the little lion's shield.
I will have no justice from Lord Rowan, nor this king.
He grasped Dunk by the forearm.
It comes to me that in days gone by, when the Green Kings ruled, you could pay a man a blood price if you had slain one of his animals or peasants.
A blood price?
Dunk was dubious.
Some other way, you said. I have some coin laid by. It was only a little claret on the cheek, Ser Benis says. I could pay the man a silver stag and three to the woman for the insult. I could and would, if she would take the dam down.
The old man frowned.
I cannot go to her, however, not at Coldmoat.
A fat black fly buzzed around his head and lighted on his arm.
The castle was ours once. Did you know that, Ser Duncan?
Aye, my lord,
Sam Stoops had told him.
For 1,000 years before the conquest, we were the marshals of the North March. A score of lesser lordlings did us fealty, and 100 landed knights. We had 4 castles then, and watchtowers on the hills to warn of the coming of our enemies. Coldmoat was the greatest of our seats. Lord Perwin Oscree raised it. Perwin the Proud, they called him. After the Field of Fire, Highgarden passed from kings to stewards, and the Oscrees dwindled and diminished. 'Twas Aegon's son, King Maegor, who took Coldmoat from us. When Lord Ormond Oscree spoke out against his suppression of the Stars and Swords, as the poor fellows and the warriors' sons were called.
His voice had grown hoarse.
There is a Checky lion carved into the stone above the gates of Coldmoat. My father showed it to me the first time he took me with him to call on old Reynard Weber. I showed it to my own sons in turn. Adam served at Coldmoat as a page and squire and a...
A certain fondness grew up between him and Lord Wyman's daughter. So one winter day I donned my richest raiment and went to Lord Wyman to propose a marriage. His refusal was courteous, but as I left I heard him laughing with Sir Lucas Inchfield. I never returned to Coldmoat after that, save once, when that woman presumed to carry off one of mine own. When they told me to seek for poor Lem at the bottom of the moat, Dake, said Dunk. Bennis says his name was Dake.
Dake?
The fly was creeping down his sleeve, pausing to rub its legs together the way flies did. Sir Eustace shooed it away and rubbed his lip beneath his mustache.
Dake. That was what I said. A staunch fellow, I recall him well. He foraged for us during the war. We never marched on empty bellies. When Sir Lucas informed me of what had been done to my poor Dake, I swore a holy vow that I would never set foot inside that castle again, unless to take possession. So you see, I cannot go there, Sir Duncan, not to pay the blood price or for any other reason. I cannot.
Dunk understood.
I could go, my lord. I swore no vows.
You are a good man, Sir Duncan, a brave knight and true.
Sir Eustace gave Dunk's arm a squeeze.
Would that the gods had spared my Alisanne. You are the sort of man I had always hoped that she might marry. A true knight, Sir Duncan, a true knight.
Dunk was turning red.
I will tell Lady Webber what you said about the blood price, but
you will save Sir Bennis from Dake's fate. I know it. I am no mean judge of men, and you are the true steel. You will give them pause, Sir, the very sight of you. When that woman sees that Standfast has such a champion, she may well take down that dam of her own accord.
Dunk did not know what to say to that. He knelt.
My lord, I will go upon the morrow and do the best I can.
On the morrow.
The fly came circling back and lit upon Sir Eustace's left hand. He raised his right and smashed it flat.
Yes, on the morrow.
Another bath? Egg said, dismayed. You washed yesterday.
And then I spent a day in armor, swimming in my sweat. Close your lips and fill the kettle.
You washed the night Sir Eustace took us into service,
Egg pointed out.
And last night, and now. That's three times, Sir.
I need to treat with a highborn lady. Do you want me to turn up before her high seat smelling like Sir Bennis?
You would have to roll in a tub of maester's droppings to smell as bad as that, Sir.
Egg filled the kettle.
Sam Stoops says the castellan at Coldmoat is as big as you are. Lucas Inchfield is his name, but he's called the Long Inch for his size. Do you think he's as big as you are, Sir?
No.
It had been years since Dunk had met anyone as tall as he was. He took the kettle and hung it above the fire.
Will you fight him?
No.
Dunk almost wished it had been otherwise. He might not be the greatest fighter in the realm, but size and strength could make up for many lacks. Not for a lack of wits, though.
He was no good with words and worse with women.
This giant Lucas Longinch did not daunt him half so much as the prospect of facing the Red Widow.
I'm going to talk to the Red Widow, that's all.
What will you tell her, Sir?
That she has to take the dam down. You must take down your dam, m'lady, or else... Ask her to take down the dam, I mean. Please give back our checky water. If it pleases her. A little water, m'lady, if it please you.
Sir Eustace would not want him to beg.
How do I say it, then?
The water soon begun to steam and bubble.
Help me lug this to the tub,
Dunk told the boy. Together they lifted the kettle from the hearth and crossed the cellar to the big wooden tub.
I don't know how to talk with highborn ladies,
he confessed as they were pouring.
We both might have been killed in Dorne on account of what I said to Lady Vaith.
Lady Vaith was mad,
Egg reminded him.
But you could have been more gallant. Ladies like it when you're gallant. If you were to rescue the Red Widow the way you rescued that puppet girl from Arion...
Arion's in lease, and the widow's not in want of rescuing.
He did not want to talk of Tansel.
Tansel Too Tall was her name, but she was not too tall for me.
Well, the boy said, some knights sing gallant songs to their ladies or play them tunes upon a lute.
I have no lute.
Dunk looked morose.
And that night I drank too much in the Planky Town. You told me I sang like an ox in a mud wallow.
I had forgotten, Sir.
How could you forget?
You told me to forget, Sir, said Egg, all innocence. You told me I'd get a clout in the ear the next time I mentioned it.
There will be no singing.
Even if he had the voice for it, the only song Dunk knew all the way through was The Bear and the Maiden Fair. He doubted that would do much to win over Lady Webber. The kettle was steaming once again. They wrestled it over to the tub and upended it. Egg drew water to fill it for the third time, then clambered back onto the well.
You'd best not take any food or drink at Coldmoat, Sir. The Red Widow poisoned all her husbands.
I'm not like to marry her. She's a high-born lady, and I'm Dunk of Fleabottom, remember?
He frowned.
Just how many husbands has she had, do you know?
4, said Egg, but no children. Whenever she gives birth, a demon comes by night to carry off the issue. Sam Stoops' wife says she sold her babes unborn to the Lord of the Seven Hells, so he'd teach her his black arts.
High-born ladies don't meddle with the black arts. They dance and sing and do embroidery.
Maybe she dances with demons and embroiders evil spells,
Egg said with relish.
And how would you know what high-born ladies do, sir? Lady Vaith is the only one you ever knew.
That was insolent but true.
Might be I don't know any high-born ladies, but I know a boy who's asking for a good clout in the ear.
Dunk rubbed the back of his neck. A day in chainmail always left it hard as wood.
You've known queens and princesses. Do they dance with demons and practice the black arts?
Lady Shiera does. Lord Bloodraven's paramour. She bathes in blood to keep her beauty. And once my sister Ray put a love potion in my drink, so I'd marry her instead of my sister Dela.
Egg spoke as if such incest was the most natural thing in the world.
For him it is.
The Targaryens had been marrying brother to sister for hundreds of years to keep the blood of the dragon pure. Though the last actual dragon had died before Dunk was born, the Dragon Kings went on.
Maybe the gods don't mind them marrying their sisters. Did the potion work? Dunk asked.
It would have, said Egg, but I spit it out. I don't want a wife. I want to be a knight of the Kingsguard, and live only to serve and defend the king. The Kingsguard are sworn not to wed.
That's a noble thing, but when you're older you may find you'd sooner have a girl than a white cloak.
Dunk was thinking of Tansel Tootall, and the way she'd smiled at him at Ashford.
Sir Eustace said I was the sort of man he'd hoped to have his daughter wed. Her name was Alisanne.
She's dead, sir.
I know she's dead, said Dunk, annoyed. If she was alive, he said. If she was, he'd like her to marry me, or someone like me. I never had a lord offer me his daughter before.
His dead daughter, and the Oscreys might have been lords in the old days, but Sir Eustace is only a landed knight.
I know what he is. Do you want a clout in the ear?
Well, said Egg, I'd sooner have a clout than a wife, especially a dead wife, sir. The kettle's steaming.
They carried the water to the tub, and Dunk pulled his tunic over his head.
I will wear my Dornish tunic to Coldmoat.
It was sand silk, the finest garment that he owned, painted with his elm and falling star.
If you wear it for the ride, it will get all sweaty, sir,
Egg said.
Wear the one you wore today. I'll bring the other, and you can change when you reach the castle.
Before I reach the castle, I'd look a fool changing clothes on the drawbridge. And who said you were coming with me?
A knight is more impressive with a squire in attendance.
That was true. The boy had a good sense of such things.
He should. He served 2 years as a page at King's Landing.
Even so, Dunk was reluctant to take him into danger. He had no notion what sort of welcome awaited him at Coldmoat. If this Red Widow was as dangerous as they said, he could end up in a crow cage, like those 2 men they had seen upon the road.
You will stay and help Ennis with the small folk, he told Egg. And don't give me that sullen look.
He kicked his breeches off and climbed into the tub of steaming water.
Go on and get to sleep now, and let me have my bath. You're not going, and that's the end of it.
Egg was up and gone when Dunk awoke, with the light of the morning sun in his face.
Gods be good, how can it be so hot so soon?
He sat up and stretched, yawning, then climbed to his feet and stumbled sleepily down to the well, where he lit a fat tallow candle, splashed some cold water on his face, and dressed. When he stepped out into the sunlight, Thunder was waiting by the stable, saddled and bridled. Egg was waiting, too, with Maester, his mule. The boy had put his boots on,
For once he looked the proper squire, in a handsome doublet of green and gold checks, and a pair of tight white woolen breeches.
"The breeches were torn in the seat, but Sam Stoops's wife sewed them up for me," he announced.
"The clothes were Adam's," said Sir Eustace, as he led his own grey gelding from his stall.
A checky line adorned the frayed silk cloak that flowed from the old man's shoulders.
"The doublet is a trifle musty from the trunk, but it should serve. A knight is more impressive with a squire in attendance, so I have decided that Egg should accompany you to Coldmoat."
Outwitted by a boy of 10,
Dunk looked at Egg and silently mouthed the words "clout in the ear." The boy grinned.
"I have something for you as well, Sir Duncan. Come."
Sir Eustace produced a cloak and shook it out with a flourish. It was white wool, bordered with squares of green satin and cloth of gold. A woolen cloak was the last thing he needed in such heat, but when Sir Eustace draped it about his shoulders, Dunk saw the pride on his face and found himself unable to refuse.
"Thank you, my lord."
"It suits you well. Would that I could give you more."
The old man's mustache twitched.
"I sent Sam Stoops down into the cellar to search through my son's things. But Edwin and Harold were smaller men, thinner in the chest and much shorter in the leg. None of what they left would fit you, sad to say."
"The cloak is enough, my lord. I won't shame it."
"I do not doubt that."
He gave his horse a pat.
"I thought I'd ride with you part of the way, if you have no objection."
"None, my lord."
Egg led them down the hill, sitting tall on Maester.
"Must he wear that floppy straw hat?" Sir Eustace asked Dunk. "He looks a bit foolish, don't you think?"
"Not so foolish as when his head is peeling, my lord."
Even at this hour, with the sun barely above the horizon, it was hot.
"By afternoon, the saddles will be hot enough to raise blisters."
Egg might look elegant in the dead boy's finery, but he would be a boiled egg by nightfall. Dunk at least could change. He had his good tunic in his saddlebag and his old green one on his back.
"We'll take the west way," Sir Eustace announced. "It is little used these past years, but still the shortest way from Standfast to Coldmoat Castle."
The path took them around back of the hill, past the graves where the old knight had laid his wife and sons to rest in a thicket of blackberry bushes.
"They loved to pick the berries here, my boys. When they were little, they would come to me with sticky faces and scratches on their arms, and I'd know just where they'd been."
He smiled fondly.
"Your Egg reminds me of my Adam, a brave boy for one so young. Adam was trying to protect his wounded brother Harold when the battle washed over them. A riverman with 6 acorns on his shield took his arm off with an axe."
His sad gray eyes found Dunk's.
"This old master of yours, the Knight of Pennytree, did he fight in the Blackfyre Rebellion?"
"He did, my lord, before he took me on."
Dunk had been no more than 3 or 4 at the time, running half-naked through the alleys of Flea Bottom, more animal than boy.
"Was he for the Red Dragon or the Black?"
Red or black was a dangerous question, even now, since the days of Aegon the Conqueror. The arms of House Targaryen had borne a 3-headed dragon, red on black. Demon the Pretender had reversed those colors on his own banners, as many bastards did.
"Sir Eustace is my liege lord," Dunk reminded himself. "He has a right to ask."
"He fought beneath Lord Hayford's banner, my lord. Green fretty over gold? A green pale wavy?"
"It might be, my lord. Egg would know."
The lad could recite the arms of half the knights in Westeros.
"Lord Hayford was a noted loyalist. King Daeron made him his hand just before the battle.
Butterwell had done such a dismal job that many questioned his loyalty, but Lord Hayford had been stalwart from the first. Sir Arlen was beside him when he fell. A lord with 3 castles on his shield cut him down.
Many good men fell that day on both sides. The grass was not red before the battle." "Did your Sir Arlen tell you that?"
"Sir Arlen never liked to speak about the battle. His squire died there too. Roger of Pennytree was his name, Sir Arlen's sister's son."
Even saying the name made Dunk feel vaguely guilty.
"I stole his place."
Only princes and great lords had the means to keep 2 squires. If Aegon the Unworthy had given his sword to his heir Daeron instead of his bastard demon, there might never have been a Blackfyre rebellion, and Roger of Pennytree might be alive today.
He would be a knight someplace, a truer knight than me. I would have ended on the gallows or been sent off to the Night's Watch to walk the wall until I died.
A great battle is a terrible thing, the old knight said. But in the midst of blood and carnage, there is sometimes also beauty. Beauty that could break your heart. I will never forget the way the sun looked when it set upon the red grass field. 10,000 men had died, and the air was thick with moans and lamentations. But above us the sky turned gold and red and orange. So beautiful it made me weep to know that my sons would never see it.
He sighed.
It was a closer thing than they would have you believe these days, if not for Bloodraven.
I'd always heard that it was Balor Breakspear who won the battle, said Dunk. Him and Prince Maker.
The hammer and the anvil?
The old man's mustache gave a twitch.
The singers leave out much and more. Demon was the warrior himself that day. No man could stand before him. He broke Lord Arryn's van to pieces and slew the Knight of Nine Stars and Wild Will Wainwood before coming up against Ser Gawain Corbray of the King's Guard. For near an hour they danced together on their horses, wheeling and circling and slashing as men died all around them. It's said that whenever Blackfyre and Lady Forlorn clashed, you could hear the sound for a league around. It was half a song and half a scream, they say. But when at last the lady faltered, Blackfyre clove through Ser Gawain's helm and left him blind and bleeding. Demon dismounted to see that his fallen foe was not trampled, and commanded Red Tusk to carry him back to the maesters in the rear. And there was his mortal error, for the raven's teeth had gained the top of Weeping Ridge, and Bloodraven saw his half-brother's royal standard 300 yards away, and Demon and his sons beneath it. He slew Aegon first, the elder of the twins, for he knew that Demon would never leave the boy whilst warmth lingered in his body, though white shafts fell like rain. Nor did he, though 7 arrows pierced him, driven as much by sorcery as by Blood Raven's bow. Young Aemon took up Blackfyre when the blade slipped from his dying father's fingers, so Bloodraven slew him too, the younger of the twins. Thus perished the Black Dragon and his sons. There was much and more afterward, I know. I saw a bit of it myself, the rebels running. Bittersteel turning the rout and leading his mad charge. His battle with Bloodraven second only to the one Demon fought with Gawain Corbray. Prince Balor's hammer blow against the rebel rear, the Dornishmen all screaming as they filled the air with spears. But at the end of the day, it made no matter. The war was done when Demon died. So close a thing. If Demon had ridden over Gawain Corbray and left him to his fate, he might have broken Maker's left before Bloodraven could take the ridge. The day would have belonged to the Black Dragons then, with the hand slain and the road to King's Landing open before them. Demon might have been sitting on the Iron Throne by the time Prince Balor could come up with his Stormlords and his Dornishmen. The singers can go on about their hammer and their anvil, sir. But it was the Kinslayer who turned the tide with a white arrow and a black spell. He rules us now as well, make no mistake. King Ares is his creature. It would not surprise to learn that Bloodraven had ensorcelled his grace to bend him to his will. Small wonder we are cursed.
Ser Eustace shook his head and lapsed into a brooding silence. Dunk wondered how much Egg had overheard, but there was no way to ask him.
How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? He thought.
Already the day was growing hotter.
Even the flies have fled,
Dunk noted.
Flies have better sense than knights. They stay out of the sun.
He wondered whether he and Egg would be offered hospitality at Coldmoat. A tankard of cool brown ale would go down well. Dunk was considering that prospect with pleasure when he remembered what Egg had said about the Red Widow poisoning her husbands. His thirst fled at once.
There were worse things than dry throats.
There was a time when House Oscree held all the lands for many leagues around, from Nunny in the east to Cobblecover,
Ser Eustace said.
Cold Moat was ours, and the Horseshoe Hills, the caves at Daring Downs, the villages of Dosk and Little Dosk and Brandy Bottom, both sides of Leafy Lake. Oscree maids wed Florence, Swans and Tarbecks, even High Towers in Blackwoods.
The edge of Watts Wood had come in sight. Dunk shielded his eyes with one hand and squinted at the greenery. For once he envied Egg his floppy hat.
At least we'll have some shade. Watts Wood once extended all the way to Cold Moat,
Ser Eustace said.
I do not recall who Watt was. Before the conquest, you could find aurochs in his wood, though, and great elks of 20 hands and more.
There were more red deer than any man could take in a lifetime, for none but the king and the Checky Lion were allowed to hunt here. Even in my father's day, there were trees on both sides of the stream, but the spiders cleared the woods away to make pasture for their cows and sheep and horses.
A thin finger of sweat crept down Dunk's chest. He found himself wishing devoutly that his liege lord would keep quiet.
It is too hot for talk. It is too hot for riding. It is just too bloody hot.
In the woods they came upon the carcass of a great brown tree cat, crawling with maggots.
Ew,
Egg said, as he walked maester wide around it.
That stinks worse than Ser Benis.
Ser Eustace reined up.
A tree cat. I had not known there were any left in this wood. I wonder what killed him.
When no one answered, he said,
I will turn back here. Just continue on the west way, and it will take you straight to Cold Moat. You have the coin?
Dunk nodded.
Good. Come home with my water, Ser.
The old knight trotted off back the way they'd come. When he was gone, Egg said,
I thought how you should speak to Lady Webber, Ser. You should win her to your side with gallant compliments.
The boy looked as cool and crisp in his checky tunic as Ser Eustace had in his cloak.
Am I the only one who sweats? Gallant compliments,
Dunk echoed.
What sort of gallant compliments?
You know, Ser, tell her how fair and beautiful she is.
Dunk had doubts.
She's outlived four husbands. She must be as old as Lady Vaith. If I say she's fair and beautiful when she's old and warty, she will take me for a liar.
You just need to find something true to say about her. That's what my brother Dayron does. Even ugly old whores can have nice hair or well-shaped ears, he says.
Well-shaped ears?
Dunk's doubts were growing.
Or pretty eyes. Tell her that her gown brings out the color of her eyes.
The lad reflected for a moment.
Unless she only has the one eye, like Lord Bloodraven.
My lady, that gown brings out the color of your eye.
Dunk had heard knights and lordlings mouth such gallantries at other ladies. They never put it quite so baldly, though.
Good lady, that gown is beautiful. It brings out the color of both your lovely eyes.
Some of the ladies had been old and scrawny, or fat and florid, or pock-scarred and homely, but all wore gowns and had two eyes, and as Dunk recalled, they'd been well pleased by the flowery words.
What a lovely gown, my lady. It brings out the lovely beauty of your beautiful colored eyes. A hedge knight's life is simpler,
Dunk said glumly.
If I say the wrong thing, she's like to sew me in a sack of rocks and throw me in her moat.
I doubt she'll have that big a sack, Ser, said Egg. We could use my boot instead.
No, Dunk growled. We couldn't.
When they emerged from Watts Wood, they found themselves well upstream of the dam. The waters had risen high enough for Dunk to take that soak he'd dreamed of.
Deep enough to drown a man, he thought.
On the far side, the bank had been cut through and a ditch dug to divert some of the flow westward. The ditch ran along the road, feeding a myriad of smaller channels that snaked off through the fields.
Once we cross the stream, we are in the widow's power.
Dunk wondered what he was riding into. He was only one man, with a boy of 10 to guard his back. Egg fanned his face.
Ser, why are we stopped?
We're not.
Dunk gave his mount his heels and splashed down into the stream. Egg followed on the mule. The water rose as high as Thunder's belly before it began to fall again. They emerged dripping on the widow's side. Ahead, the ditch ran straight as a spear, shining green and golden in the sun.
When they spied the towers of Coldmoat several hours later, Dunk stopped to change to his good Dornish tunic and loosen his longsword in its scabbard. He did not want the blade sticking should he need to pull it free. Egg gave his dagger's hilt a shake as well, his face solemn beneath his floppy hat. They rode on side by side, Dunk on the big destrier, the boy upon his mule, the Osprey banner flapping listlessly from its staff. Coldmoat came as somewhat of a disappointment after all that Ser Eustace had said of it. Compared to Storm's End or Highgarden and other lordly seats the Dunk had seen, it was a modest castle, but it was a castle, not a fortified watchtower. Its crenellated outer walls stood 30 feet high, with towers at each corner, each one half again the size of Standfast. From every turret and spire, the black banners of Weber hung heavy, each emblazoned with a spotted spider upon a silvery web.
"Sir,"
Egg said,
"the water, look where it goes."
The ditch ended under Coldmoat's eastern walls, spilling down into the moat from which the castle took its name. The gurgle of the falling water made Dunk grind his teeth.
"She will not have my checky water.
Come," he said to Egg. Over the arch of the main gate, a row of spider banners drooped in the still air. Above, the older sigil carved deep into the stone. Centuries of wind and weather had worn it down, but the shape of it was still distinct. A rampant lion made of checkered squares. The gates beneath were open. As they clattered across the drawbridge, Dunk made note of how low the moat had fallen. 6 feet at least, he judged. Two spearmen barred their way at the portcullis. One had a big black beard and one did not. The beard demanded to know their purpose here.
"My lord of Osprey sent me to treat with Lady Weber," Dunk told him. "I am called Ser Duncan the Tall."
"Well, I knew you wasn't Bennis," said the beardless guard. "We would have smelled him coming."
He had a missing tooth and a spotted spider badge sewn above his heart. The beard was squinting suspiciously at Dunk.
"No one sees her ladyship unless the Long Inch gives his leave. You come with me. Your stable boy can stay with the horses."
"I'm a squire, not a stable boy,"
Egg insisted.
"Are you blind or only stupid?"
The beardless guard broke into laughter. The beard put the point of his spear to the boy's throat.
"Say that again."
Dunk gave Egg a clout in the ear.
"No, shut your mouth and tend the horses," he dismounted. "I'll see Ser Lucas now."
The beard lowered his spear.
"He's in the yard."
They passed beneath the spiked iron portcullis and under a murder hole before emerging in the outer ward. Hounds were barking in the kennels, and Dunk could hear singing coming from the leaded glass windows of a 7-sided wooden sept. In front of the smithy, a blacksmith was shoeing a warhorse, with a prentice boy assisting. Nearby, a squire was loosing shafts at the archery butts, while a freckled girl with a long braid matched him shot for shot. The Quinton was spinning, too, as half a dozen knights in quilted padding took their turns knocking it around. They found Ser Lucas Longinch among the watchers at the Quinton, speaking with a great fat septon who was sweating worse than Dunk, a round white pudding of a man in robes as damp as if he'd worn them in his bath. Inchfield was a lance beside him, stiff and straight and very tall, though not so tall as Dunk.
6 feet and 7 inches, Dunk judged, and each inch prouder than the last.
Though he wore black silk and cloth of silver, Ser Lucas looked as cool as if he were walking on the wall.
"My lord," the guard hailed him, "this one comes from the Chicken Tower for an audience with her ladyship."
The septon turned first with a hoot of delight that made Dunk wonder if he were drunk.
"And what is this? A hedge knight? You have large hedges in the reach."
The septon made a sign of blessing.
"May the warrior fight ever at your side. I am Septon Sefton, an unfortunate name, but mine own. And you?"
"Ser Duncan the Tall."
"A modest fellow, this one," the septon said to Ser Lucas. "Were I as large as him, I'd call myself Ser Sefton the Immense, Ser Sefton the Tower, Ser Sefton with the clouds about his ears."
His moon face was flushed, and there were wine stains on his robe. Ser Lucas studied Dunk. He was an older man, 40 at the least, perhaps as old as 50, sinewy rather than muscular, with a remarkably ugly face.
His lips were thick, his teeth a yellow tangle, his nose broad and fleshy, his eyes protruding.
And he is angry, Dunk sensed, even before the man said,
Hedge knights are beggars, with blades at best, outlaws at worst. Begone with you, we want none of your sort here.
Dunk's face darkened.
Sir Eustace Oscree sent me from Standfast to treat with the lady of the castle.
Oscree? The Septon glanced at the Long Inch. Oscree of the Checky Lion? I thought House Oscree was extinguished.
Near enough as makes no matter. The old man is the last of them. We let him keep a crumbling tower house a few leagues east.
Sir Lucas frowned at Dunk.
If Sir Eustace wants to talk with her ladyship, let him come himself.
His eyes narrowed.
You were the one with Bennis at the dam. Don't trouble to deny it. I ought to hang you.
Seven save us.
The Septon dabbed sweat from his brow with his sleeve.
A brigand, is he? And a big one. Sir, repent your evil ways, and the mother will have mercy.
The Septon's pious plea was undercut when he farted.
Oh, dear. Forgive my wind, sir. That's what comes of beans and barley bread.
I am not a brigand,
Dunk told the two of them, with all the dignity that he could muster. The Long Inch was unmoved by the denial.
Do not presume upon my patience, sir, if you are a sir. Run back to your chicken tower and tell Sir Eustace to deliver up Sir Bennis Brownstench. If he spares us the trouble of winkling him out of Standfast, her ladyship may be more inclined to clemency.
I will speak with her ladyship about Sir Bennis and the trouble at the dam, and about the stealing of our water, too.
Stealing? Said Sir Lucas. Say that to our lady, and you'll be swimming in a sack before the sun has set. Are you quite certain that you wish to see her?
The only thing that Dunk was certain of was that he wanted to drive his fist through Lucas Inchfield's crooked yellow teeth.
I've told you what I want.
Oh, let him speak with her, the Septon urged. What harm could it do? Sir Duncan has had a long ride beneath this beastly sun. Let the fellow have his say.
Sir Lucas studied Dunk again.
Our Septon is a godly man. Come.
I will thank you to be brief. He strode across the yard, and Dunk was forced to hurry after him. The doors of the castle sept had opened, and worshippers were streaming down the steps. There were knights and squires, a dozen children, several old men, three septas in white robes and hoods, and one soft, fleshy lady of high birth, garbed in a gown of dark blue damask, trimmed with mirish lace. So long its hems were trailing in the dirt, Dunk judged her to be 40. Beneath a spun silver net, her auburn hair was piled high, but the reddest thing about her was her face.
My lady, Sir Lucas said when they stood before her and her septas, this hedge knight claims to bring a message from Sir Eustace Oscree. Will you hear it?
If you wish it, Sir Lucas.
She peered at Dunk so hard that he could not help but recall Egg's talk of sorcery.
I don't think this one bathes in blood to keep her beauty.
The widow was stout and square, with an oddly pointed head that her hair could not quite conceal. Her nose was too big and her mouth too small. She did have two eyes, he was relieved to see, but all thought of gallantry had abandoned Dunk by then.
Sir Eustace bid me talk